Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
Now, welcome back. Hour number three of the Tom Abraham Show. Hanging and banging here today. Like Kyle Larson on a final restart, man. How about that kid? If you're looking for a guy, that might be your guy. I mean, he's a little guy, but he might be your guy. Joining us now to talk a little bit of NASCAR. Guy does a tremendous job with it. One Mr. Jordan Bianchi for the SB Nation folks. Jordan, welcome back. How are you, man?
Always a pleasure. You are 100% right about Larson. He certainly is the future of NASCAR.
Well, we would like to think, right? But I mean, the guy's he's a jockey, is what he is. I mean, is he as big as Jeff Gordon and Mark Martin? I mean, he's like a midget. That guy. Look, does he shave yet or what?
He's a little guy, and he looks like he's 12, but he drives like a veteran. And I'll tell you what: if you like guys who are fearless and who don't give a damn and are willing to take chances and go after it, that's your guy.
He is something, and what's the situation with Ganassi, first of all? I mean, is he locked in with them for a while? Is this a guy we could see moving around?
He is locked in for a while. Now, how long that is, no one knows. Ganassi does not disclose this, and he is very tight-lipped about it, but the conventional wisdom is that he's locked in for at least another 2 years. But if you're Rick Hendrick or you're Roger Penske or Joe Gibbs, you're doing everything you can to get this guy, because this guy is, I mean, he is really starting to live up to the hype of being the next Jeff Gordon, the next Tony Stewart. He's looking like that kind of transcendent driver, and you're going to open the vault for him. And Ganassi's going to have a bidding war in his hands, there's no doubt. And Ganassi's not a guy who's always been able to or wanting to pay guys top dollar. He's going to have to keep Larson.
Yeah, you would think he'd have to keep him. I mean, that could make that team. But, man, you know, you think about the holes that are going to be in the Hendrick team, the holes that are in the Childress team, the holes that might be in the Gibbs team. I mean, there are some heavy duty people you would think that would come out of the woodwork to come after that guy.
Absolutely. There is going to be a bidding war. Cause like you said, I mean, you look at Hendrick Motorsports. Well, who's going to replace Jimmy Johnson in a couple of years? Well, that his contract coincides when Little Larson's a free agent, you know, and you start looking at Penske's operation. Ganassi's going to have to write a very big check, and that's fine because, you know, you also said as well, what was Ganassi like before Kyle Larson got there? They were considered underachievers. They didn't win races very often. They never lived up to the standards. They always fell short of what people expected out of them. Kyle Larson comes on the scene, and it's not all Kyle Larson. They've done a lot of things behind the scenes as well. But Kyle Larson arrives. He's a tremendous talent, and now they're winning races. He's going to be the second seed in the playoffs. He looks like a championship contender. He's really elevated that whole program to another level. There's not many drivers you can say that about.
Now, let's be honest. If there isn't that last wreck, that thing never gets to that point, and we're singing the praises of another hot foot right now, Martin Truex, because that cat had flat out checked out. I mean, he was just a gone ass there, you know, until that last caution.
Absolutely. I mean, you're 100% right. I mean, without that caution, Martin Truex Jr. wins that race going away. It's his fourth win of the year, fifth win of the year, and, you know, just continuation of this dominating season. But I will say, you've got to be in position to capitalize when you get the opportunities before you. Sometimes you get that lucky break, and you got to pounce on it. And Larson certainly did. He was fourth on that restart. He knew he had an opportunity before him, and he went after it. And he really didn't care that he had to move some guys around and bounce off of them. And that's what you got to do. Sometimes you're the dog, and sometimes you're the tree, and sometimes you got to be really go after it. And he's not afraid to do that, and that's why Kyle Larson keeps doing what he does.
Yeah, it's amazing too. Truex with 35 points now for the playoffs. So he's and Larson is second at 18. He's moved ahead of Jimmy Johnson, who has 16 points. Both he and Jimmy Johnson have 3 wins. Truex with 4 wins at this point. And now you still got guys looking to hang on. I mean, you know, right now I believe that Elliott is in, Chase Elliott. He's in without a win, but he's one of those guys that's vulnerable, right? You got, what is it, Elliott, McMurray, and Kenseth that are holding on the last 3 spots?
That's 100% correct. And Clint Boyer is the first guy out.
Yeah. Okay. So so it's going to be, it would be wise for, now how many more do they got to go? Just a couple more races left, right?
Yep. Just 3. They got Bristol this weekend, the Saturday night race, and then after that they've got Darlington on Labor Day weekend, and then the season finale, the regular season finale at Richmond.
I can't believe Darlington's not part of the deal and not part of the chase. It just seems like it wouldn't make sense.
I agree. I mean, it's a great track, but I also like it on Labor Day weekend. Just the traditionalist in me, that's the weekend it needs to be on. And to me, if you could do anything, you would end the regular season at Darlington on Labor Day weekend, because then it would shorten up the season and you give an iconic event even more meaning and really make it special.
Yeah, well, I think you're talking about ending the whole year at Darlington. Is that what you're saying, or ending just the regular season?
Ending the regular season.
See, I'm telling you, man. I think, you know, you saw what NASCAR just did, right? I mean, NASCAR just jumped out to that golf, what the PGA did. They moved the PGA Championship to the spring because they want to have everything done by the British Open in the middle of July. They'll start their playoffs, and everything is going to be done with their FedEx Cup playoffs before the football season starts. I'm telling you, man, July the 4th, first playoff race, Daytona, end that sucker at Michigan, or end that sucker at Darlington, move the Miami race into the, you know, get rid of some of these places we go to twice that we don't need to go to. And then you have this 4-month off season instead of a 2-month off season. And by the time NASCAR comes back around in February, everybody's really chomping at the bit for it. You know what I mean?
It would make it
more affordable for the teams. It would be give these guys some sort of an off season. You know, a total of like 28 races instead of 38 races.
Yep.
It's so doable. It would save everybody money, and I think it would be a genius thing for them to do. Get away from football.
I agree 100%. You're spot on so many levels there. One, the regular season needs to be shorter. You cannot go from mid-February to mid-November. 2, you have to absolutely move away from football and college football. You just can't go head-to-head with them. It's a losing proposition. You end the season on Labor Day, and you crown your champion Labor Day weekend or somewhere around there.
Yeah,
get out of the way
done.
For the NFL. Yeah. And give your audience an opportunity to miss NASCAR, because absence makes the heart grow fonder. Because let's be honest, when the season ends in mid-November and the season starts in mid-February, people are still kind of like getting over the NASCAR season. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to get over it and say, you know, I'm looking forward to this again. Shorter's better. You know, 20-some regular season races, you know, maybe 8 to 9 playoff races. That's the perfect way to do it. And like you said, you also get away from these tracks that have 2 races that frankly don't need it. It's a win-win proposition. I would love to see it happen. I know there's some people in NASCAR who would like to see this happen as well. There's kind of a movement maybe towards it.
Drivers.
drivers especially. But the tracks too, because they realize, you know, in the fall, they're getting beat. When you've got Talladega, for example, they have a great race. Every playoff race, Talladega is an amazing race. But guess what? Alabama plays Tennessee that weekend usually as well. And what do you think the media coverage in that state's going towards? It's not going towards NASCAR.
Yeah, and there would be a few places you go to twice. I mean, you're still going to go,
absolutely.
You know, you still go to Daytona and Talladega twice. You know, I think you do that. You know, so I think there's some other things that you do twice. Yep. But it could be such a great schedule. And really, when you think about it, because not only does it end in mid-November and then pick up again in mid-February, think about what happens from the end of the NASCAR season to the beginning of Daytona, Thanksgiving. Then it's Christmas, the holidays. Then it's the bowl games. Then it's the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl. And then NASCAR's back. It's like you don't even know that it was gone because you were at the holidays and in the NFL playoffs, and it's back. So you need to have something to create that that, you know, look, the college football is a perfect example. 12 games, and we talk about it for 40 freaking weeks, and we get it for 12 weeks. You know what I mean? And I think that's part of the genius. Even the NFL is a shorter, you know, a shorter season, 4 months of a regular season, 8 months of an off season. It's just too much.
I agree. And this is the problem I have with baseball. It's 162 games. It just, the season feels so long, it drags, and it loses the importance. You start making these races matter more. You only go to Michigan, for example, once a year. Well, that's in the manufacturer's backyard. That race already means a lot because they go there and they want to win in front of their fans and the guy, people who work in that factories and everything. But you only go there once a year. All of a sudden, that one race at Michigan takes on added importance. It really means something to win there every year. That's a good thing. And it also makes these tracks, too, that are having a hard time filling two races. You know what? All of a sudden, you can funnel that crowd to one race and make it better. We've seen this happen elsewhere. You know, Fontana in Southern California used to have two races. They didn't do a very good job. It didn't draw. The racing wasn't very good. Now they've got one race. The race nearly sells out every year. It's fantastic, and it means something on the calendar. That's what you want.
Jordan Bianchi with us. We're talking some NASCAR as we do each and every Monday. All right, Kevin Harvick's comments. I like Harvick. All right, I'm a guy that likes Harvick. I like his driving style. I think he's old school. I don't think too many guys could have gotten in that car after Dale died and did what he did and did it with respect. So I'm a Harvick guy. I like Harvick. There's no question about it. It's even better now that he's in a Ford. Having said that, I haven't found anybody that can lend any credence at all to his comments about Dale Jr. actually stunting NASCAR's popularity. And my argument would be, hey, Harv, what did you do about it? You won a championship. Why don't people like you then? You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know that Dale is a problem. He can't stop people from liking Jr. I think that it was up to Harvick and Gordon was not a real likable guy. And a lot of these other guys that were not Southern guys, to be honest with you, I hate to say that. But, you know, it was up to them to grab some of that headline, and they didn't. So, it's not always that the best is the most popular. Jimmy Johnson is the best, but Junior just reeked of NASCAR royalty, and that's just the way it is. I don't think anybody has, agreed what it was that Harvick had to say.
No, and I'm in that camp, too, and I agree with what you said. And I like Harvick. I like him as a driver. I like his personality. I think he's really great for the sport. But if Earnhardt would have won the championship last year, does that really move the needle? Are people coming out to the races? Are more people watching on TV? No, and I'll tell you this, and Harvick points towards Earnhardt's lack of success, and if he had more success, more people would have followed. And that is inaccurate. And I point to toward 2014. Dale Earnhardt Jr. won the season opening Daytona 500, the sport's biggest race. He won three races during the regular season. He was an absolute championship contender. Guess what? Ratings weren't skyrocketing. Attendance was still flat. NASCAR still had the same issues they're dealing with now. Earnhardt's popularity only goes so far. What's inflicting NASCAR is far bigger than Dale Earnhardt Jr. He's actually helped the sport stay relevant far more than it has. And you could argue that if he wasn't around and he wasn't competitive and wasn't winning races these last few years, where would NASCAR be at then? And there's a very good argument to be made of what happens when Dale Earnhardt Jr. goes away next season. And we talk a lot about these young drivers, Kyle Larson, for example, in the future and how great they are and how talented they are and what NASCAR's future looks very promising. But there still is not that transcendent driver who casual race fans or non-race fans know, who say when they hear the name Dale Earnhardt Jr., they go, oh, I know who that is. I may not follow NASCAR, but I recognize who he is.
Right.
NASCAR doesn't have that personality. They don't have that Jeff Gordon who's going to host Saturday Night Live. That's not on Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s shoulders. That's on NASCAR's shoulders. And frankly, like you said, it's on other drivers' shoulders too. Kevin Harvick's shoulders and Jimmy Johnson's shoulders to become that superstar megawatt personality that non-race fans or casual race fans just flock to because they're curious about their personalities. That's not on Dale Earnhardt Jr.
I thought Tony Stewart, would have been a guy that people would have gone to because he was very much like old school type of driver, a grumpy guy, kind of, was like Ironhead a little bit, kind of like Earnhardt and so on. But again, I think that there were parts of it. He was not likable enough. I will say this about Earnhardt, even though he continued to win the most popular driver award stuff, I think in the end, when they write the book and the story about this whole thing, I think going to Hendrick and getting in an 88 ultimately, I think that's where you can point to a beginning decline there. I think there was something about it being an Earnhardt Enterprises number eight that looked like the car he was driving when his dad died. If he could have stayed in that deal with the Budweiser and Earnhardt were perfect. He is in a car with a number that is not iconic, 88, even though Darrell Waltrip ran at 88 for Mountain Dew. He's got a changing scheme that was always different. And if there was any way possible, because I know that Childress offered him that opportunity, if there was any way possible that he had gotten in that three all the way back then, I think it might have been a little bit different. I think it might have been a little bit different because that's all we see for 3.5 hours is the car. And that 88, it just, I don't think it ever resonated. I don't think people like Hendrick Motorsport. Hendrick is Gordon and Johnson and corporate and button down and everything else. Whereas Childress had that kind of a tie back to the days of, you know, when Childress ran the number three card. I think ultimately that might have been part of the deal.
Yeah, and I agree with that to a lot of degree. And also the fact that when you go to Hendrick Motorsports, you're with the best team. So there's no longer – there's expectations where if you don't perform, all of a sudden it's on you. And like you said, too, you also lose that tie. This is the you know, his dad founded this team, DEI. It was his dad's team. He wanted – he created it for his kid. He was going to hand it off to his children, and they were going to take it into the next generation. Right. So there's all these family elements in play there, and unfortunately it just didn't work. And to Earnhardt's credit, he wanted to stay at DEI. He wanted to have he wanted to remain with that organization, and he wanted to help lead it into the next generation. And unfortunately, his stepmother.
We'll she did it. It's her fault. She killed NASCAR. It's Teresa Earnhardt's fault. She should have got the hell out of the way. That should have been DEI. Should have been DEI Junior immediately. And with his sister and with Carrie, his brother, and it should have been all Earnhardt's. She could have cashed checks and stood over there as Dale's widow and just stayed Dale's widow, not screwed around with anybody else and all that stuff. That's what she needed to do. It's Teresa Earnhardt's fault. She killed NASCAR. How about that?
There's a better case to be made for that than there is for to blame Dale Earnhardt Jr.
That's right. So, Harvick, get your crap together. I'm going to tweet that out right now to Kevin Harvick. Teresa Earnhardt killed NASCAR. All right. What's going on? Give me a silly season update. What's the latest? People are losing rides left and right, and there's all kinds of names that are going to be available.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt Busch, Matt Kenseth, Casey Kane are still out there. It's going to be interesting to see how they end up. Danica Patrick's still out there. It looks like Matt Kenseth, unless something formulates with Stewart Haas Racing, it doesn't look like he's going to end up with a big ride next year. And if that's the case, I don't know if you're going to see Matt Kenseth around next year. It's this sweeping generation of bringing in these young guys who are cheaper, who have talent, and you'd rather build around them than pay a driver, you know, multi-millions of dollars. And really kind of and organizations are realizing, you know what, we have to cut expenses, and the number one expenses to cut is driver salaries. And it's fortunate, but that's the case, and that may be Matt Kenseth may not have a ride for next year.
Yeah, okay. Shorten the season. Then they can save money. How about that?
There you go.
Can have big money stars for a shorter season, and then it'll work. All right, Jordan, I appreciate you, man, as always.
Thank you, sir.
Jordan Bianchi has been our guest from SB Nation. Teresa Earnhardt's fault. I'm gonna tweet that. It's Teresa Earnhardt's fault, Harv. Just want you to know that, Harv. Well, let me get a break. Guys, you got to sign your texts. I don't get the texts. I don't get the name. This is a good one here from the 239. Trim 8 races, Phoenix 2 being one of them. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's your trim, about 8 races. That would make sense to me. About 8. That's what you need to do. All right, when we come back, Teresa Walker will join us. Titans have a preseason game in the books. It was forgettable. But, you know, we got to see them, and so that's something good. All right, we'll come back with Teresa Walker right after this on 730-1039
DM. Now back to the big dog, Bark Bark.
All right. Yeah.
Well, another suggestion from the 256, drop the Brickyard 400 from the schedule. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. plates, no plates, just enough with the Indy, with the Brickyard 400. Okay, Indy is for open wheel. Just stop it. All right, joining us now to talk about the Tennessee Titans, who played their first preseason game on Saturday night. One Miss Teresa Walker. T-Dub, welcome in. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm a little perplexed. I don't know what the heck I was looking at there on Saturday night, man. That even for a preseason game, that was hard to, it was hard to watch. You know what I'm saying?
It was, but you know, I think it's one of the things we anticipate the return of football so much that, you know, it's game. It's preseason football. Yeah. Very vanilla. That said, anyone watching that Titans game, don't think that Mike Mularkey's happy with it. You know, I mean, yesterday in critiquing it, he said that they were some, you know, critical errors, catastrophic mistakes on a few situations. Not as many as he thought when he left the field on Saturday night, but, you know, he watched the game tape yesterday a couple times and still didn't like what he saw. So the one thing, though, that he's fairly confident about is that, you know, in his experience, he has seen the Titans bounce back when they have, done poorly. And so he's fairly confident that that's what will happen now. Now, they've got to go out and do it. And I tell you, Tom, they're going to have to this week because they have the Carolina Panthers coming in, joint practices on Wednesday and Thursday, and then a Saturday afternoon game at the stadium kicking off at 2 p.m. So, they better, or, you know, the level of panic and anticipation, worry, whatever adjective emotion you want to say, it'll be cranking up severely.
Yeah, well, it needs not to. I mean, these are practices, basically. I'm going to be at practice on Thursday. I look forward to seeing you there. And, I kind of want to eyeball what's going on there. The stuff that they're putting on film there is as important, if not more important, than the quote, exhibition game. The NFL tells us not to use that term, but that's all these are. They're glorified scrimmages. There should only be two. The more I watch them now, the more I would say that. But having watched, let's say we're watching practice that day. Having watched practice that day, it was a little concerning to see the offensive line get kind of pushed around a little bit. And I know that the first team offensive line was only in there for a handful, a dozen or 18 plays, something like that. And they did give up that big hit on Alex Tanny. We'll get to that in a moment. That might have been the fullback more than the line. But it was, even all the way down through the line from a depth issue, way too much pressure on the quarterbacks.
Well, absolutely. Now, Mike Mularkey did make it clear yesterday that the first line, which, you know, played a little bit longer after Marcus Mariota came out, gave up one sack. That was the one on Mariota that had people panicking and it's like, oh, my God, is he going to get back up? He's healthy. Yeah. The leg is healed up. But the other seven, yes, that was a mistake. Now, some of that is maybe Tanny holding on to the ball too long. One where it looked like Derrick Henry may have been to blame. No, that was Jalston Fowler who made that mistake. And he kind of said, yeah, the running backs, that they need to do better. You know, that's things that they've practiced, worked on, and usually done a good job on, but not Saturday night. So that's that, you know, this is a team that cut down the sacks from 54 in 2015, Marcus Mariota's rookie year, to 28 total last season. They were one of five teams in the NFL, Tom, that were in the top 10 for sacks allowed, fewest sacks allowed, and rushing yards. So they did a really good job of paving the way and protecting. But that said, you see eight sacks. They gave up five was the most they allowed in any game last year. That's just not something you want to see. And you know, with Russ Grimm as the offensive line coach, that feeling that will be a big focus of cleaning up.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And now there were a couple of things that, but really this game was played to me like a 3-0 game, which is even more horrific. But I mean, that's how it was played because the first drive of the Jets, it gets aided greatly by a personal foul against Jarrell Casey on a third down and long. Titans are off the field. They get the personal foul. They move the ball 15 yards. It's a 25-yard penalty from where the sack would have been to where the ball goes. And then on that drive, it culminates with the only touchdown of this game. But going back to the penalty on Jarrell Casey, I cannot believe that would have gotten called in the fourth game of the season in a game that meant something. I don't know if this is a referee sending a message. I know that there's been issues with this particular referee in the past being very inconsistent. I don't know what else is Jarrell Casey supposed to do. That's not diving at the legs of a player. He's on the ground and reaches up from behind and wraps up the quarterback from the back. Somebody would have to clear that up because we see that every single week in the NFL.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, now they are. Somebody hit him in the knee, and they are trying to protect the knees, but you're right. That did not come close to that. So I don't know what the referee was looking at. Maybe he just saw the quarterback going down and Casey down on the ground. And but, you know, it's preseason for the officials as well, is what Mike Mularkey said. So,
yeah.
You know, it definitely doesn't hurt or help, rather. You'd rather, I mean, that they should have been off the field. And, you know, that may end up being a game that they would have won. But they didn't. And, you know, I got a feeling there was a call made to the, you know, to the NFL league office and point out a couple things, because, you know, you want to point those things out now so that they can be fixed in the future.
Well,
but
you
remember,
clear.
In the regular season, Tom, New York will be able to help fix a couple of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they'll be, you know, any replay reviews, they're going to be having a hand. This is the kind of thing, though, that you they're going to err on the side of helping the quarterback and keeping him safe no matter what. So we may end up seeing some similar situations once we get into the regular season.
Well, this is where I talk about the inconsistency then, because nobody was helping the quarterback when Alex Tanney took a crown of a helmet to the chin. I mean, the guy gets up, he thinks he's Batman. I mean, there's a reason why he staggered off the field, you know, after that hit, and why his helmet was you know, half coming off. That was a, you know, look, it looked good. I mean, you know, as an old defensive guy, I mean, I liked the hit. It was a good, you know, it was, you know, kind of a clean shot that way. But that's the very definition. If that's Ben Roethlisberger, or if that's even maybe Marcus Mariota or many other quarterbacks in the league, that is a dipped head, crown to the chin shot. That's a, you know, how can you send a player off and tell him that he's got to go off into the concussion protocol if he didn't take a shot to the head? I don't understand that, and I don't think that New York or any replay is going to do anything about that, right?
No, and you're right. I mean, with all the focus on protecting quarterbacks that we were just talking about and protecting concussions at that, I heard a lot of people talking about how there were that was he went in with his shoulders. You got to watch the head. You got to watch the helmet.
Well, he rolls his head.
So it's like you and I have both seen many occasions where people have been fined and punished and flagged in the game for that play. You know, again, I got to kind of fall back on this preseason opener. You would think that officials would be in better shape. But, you know, unfortunately, when they make a mistake, it's pretty easy to see.
Yeah, and that might be one of those deals where the kid gets a fine. It didn't get a penalty, but he ends up with a fine. You know, he might have a little envelope, you know, later on in the week. We'll have to see. Teresa Walker with us from the AP in Tennessee, talking to some Titans off of their first game. Alex Tanney. Now, of course, he plays the rest of the game. Who knows how, you know, how scrambled his eggs were at that point in time, but he obviously, they felt comfortable enough to run him back out there. He ends up 11 of 27 for 132 yards. Are they trying to determine whether or not he can battle Matt Cassel for the two, or are they trying to determine whether or not he's worthy of being the number three? Because he is not the guy. If they got to go to Alex Tanney, they got big, big problems.
Well, I think here's the thing. Alex Tanney has used up all of his eligibility for the practice squad, so they need to know what they've got in him. And the one thing Mike Mularkey said yesterday is the biggest thing that he hasn't had is experience. So it does seem like they're trying to get experience. They know what they have in Matt Cassel. You know, Matt Cassel was able to come off the bench and finish off the game in Jacksonville when Mariota broke his leg. He was able to get them a win in the regular season finale. And, you know, got to think you're pretty confident with Matt Cassel if you had ended up playing the Raiders the next week when they were without Derek Carr, because you've got Matt Cassel, who has won games in this league. Alex Tanney, though, he's 29, so he's a younger guy. They really, really liked him, but there's a difference between really liking a guy, keeping him on your practice squad as kind of your quasi number three, and then, you know, bumping a veteran like Cassel to be your number two. You've got to be confident in him under pressure. So, Mike Mularkey said Cassel will play this preseason, but again, they know what they've got in him. I got a feeling we're going to see more of Tanney as they try to answer that question for themselves. Is this really a competition to back up Marcus Mariota? The next three preseason games will tell us, Tom.
Who did you like in the game? Who did you see in the game that you say, okay, that guy maybe just, you know, is going to get an extra look now off of what we just saw there?
Kalen Reed. You know, Pro Football Focus gave him the best grade coming out of that game. And, you know, this, that's a kid who just, he was Mr. Irrelevant last year, but he showed his speed. That's a kid who, you know, he closed the guy and made a tackle right after making a catch. He just seems to be able to use that speed and get up there and support the run, which is something that's a very big focus for this defense. You know, Mike Malarkey was praising the cornerbacks being able to help support the run and tackle really well. They like that. But with Reed, you know, this is a kid who did really good things at Southern Miss, and you're looking at him like, okay, what can he do? You know, he showed you this, and he's fast. That's a good combination to have.
All right. As always, I appreciate you. It's going to be a big week. I think those practices are going to be worth as much, if not more, than the game on Saturday. Those practices on Wednesday and Thursday. And Lord willing, I will be there Thursday morning, and it would be good to see you again.
Same here, Tom. And hopefully the weather will be nice, and it looks like it'll be nice and hot on Thursday.
Nice. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for that good, hot, steamy weather. That's exactly right. All right, appreciate you. We'll see you then.
Sounds good. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, that's what we want. We want a little bit of a steam bath. Yeah, I'm sure. Shorts. T-Mac's going there with me. T-Mac, I think what we do is I know exactly where we can meet, too. We'll park at my old crib, my old place there at WNSR Radio.
Oh, yeah.
It's right across the street. Show you my old digs. And then we'll head over to practice.
Sounds good. I mean, we got time after practice to do a few things if you like as well, because you know, the we have a Braves game that day, so we'll have to rush back as quick as we thought we would.
Won't have to get back as quick as we thought. We're gonna do whatever's left after the Braves game. We'll come on live and do a little something with you. I think it's the last, there might be one more. I think it's the last one, or there might be one more Braves game. I'm not sure, though. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, we'll get our update with T-Mac, and we got room to open up the phone lines, and you can get in. It's 866-485-9867. Text window is open as well, 7239-TA-SHOW, 732-982-7469. Got a couple of things to get into that I haven't touched on yet. We'll get into that when we return. Also go back to the top. As well. So if you want to get into any of those things, we've got plenty of room to get you in. We've talked some golf. We talked some NASCAR. We talked about Jared Stidham getting to officially being named the quarterback at Auburn. Tennessee hasn't made their decision yet. We got the comments from Nick Saban in there from coming off of the first scrimmage on Saturday. Couple of other things we got into as well. So if you want to get in, it's a good time to do it. Back with more right after this on 730-1039. Yep.
Hey, it's our dime. Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867. Here's Tom Abraham.
A high fly, left center field. Hicks going back to the fence. It's gone! A home run! 20-year-old Rafael Devers ties the game at two. He hits it in the Yankee bullpen. Can you believe it? Against Aroldis Chapman. Wow.
Yeah, no, can't believe it. That happened. That happened last night. So Aroldis Chapman came in to put the hammer down. What would have been a tremendous win and a series win for the Yankees against the Boston Red Sox and Rafael Devers. Now, let me just put a couple of things in perspective here. Rafael Devers is 20 years old. You heard that. Joe Castiglione there on a Red Sox radio network. He's 20 years old. He's been in the big leagues for 3 weeks. He's playing part-time in the big leagues for 3 weeks. He's left-handed. Left-handed. All right, T-Mac, let me ask you a question over there, Big Encyclopedia.
I'm a lefty.
Yeah, you're a lefty. By the way, happy lefty day yesterday.
Thank you.
When was the last time a left-hander hit a home run off of Aroldis Chapman?
I'd be cheating because I read your Twitter yesterday.
Oh, okay. Well, tell them.
You tell
me. Yeah, but you don't remember.
It was your tweet.
You don't remember the tweet. 6 years ago! Yeah. And it's only happened once before!
Like I said, six years ago.
6 years ago! I mean, you gotta be kidding me. It's only happened now twice. I mean, it was a 103-mile-an-hour pitch. Chapman comes in. He makes Hanley Ramirez look silly. He's one of the best home run hitters in baseball. And then he drops 103 on Devers, who hits it out at 103. I mean, he actually hit it out at like 111 or something. He just...
We're going to try to get the big dog back. He went on such a Red Sox hating rant that we lost him. Probably disconnected himself. He's got.
I did. I think I did. I think I disconnected myself.
Yeah. I mean, you hate. I guess you.
I don't know if I did that.
You can't give the Red Sox praise. I mean, you got so mad at yourself, you had to disconnect.
And what a weekend for former Razorback and SEC Player of the Year, Andrew Benintendi. He had 2 3-run homers on Saturday night. And then last night, after that unbelievable pitcher's duel between Luis Severino and Chris Sale, Severino and Sale gave up 4 hits, and Severino gave up 2 hits before they were hauled out of the game. The Yankees come up with that run in the eighth, and then you figure, well, in the ninth, you're sending Chapman out. That's as good as done. Well, Benintendi, naturally, he ends up getting a game-winning knock, and then Huntsville's Craig Kimbrell closes it out for the Sox. Kimbrell should have been in on Friday night in the eighth inning. I don't know why they don't do that. I mean, it makes no sense at all. I mean, why is it that the closer always has to close? If the closer is your best pitcher and you're leading 3-0 and the other team's meat of their lineup is coming up in the eighth inning and in the ninth you'd be facing the bottom of the order, why not send the closer out in the eighth to quell any kind of an uprising then? But they never do that. They never do it. Let's get an update with T-Mac. This is a Doghouse Sports Report.
After losing 2 out of 3 games in a series against the Cardinals, the Atlanta Braves will travel to Colorado to take on the Rockies. Julio Teheran will get the start. You can hear every single pitch right here on The Ump. Coverage starts at 7:25. Jared Stidham has officially been named the Auburn starting quarterback. Coach Malzahn, along with the official Auburn Twitter, tweeted the announcement this morning. Stidham started 3 games as a true freshman at Baylor, where he completed 75 of his 109 passing attempts for 1,265 yards, 12 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. The Stidham-led Tigers opened the season with Georgia Southern on September 2nd. Justin Thomas won the PGA Championship this weekend. The Crimson Tide alum shot a 5-under 66 Friday to get him back into the mix heading into the weekend, where he shot 69 and a 68 to finish the tournament with an 8-under 276. The PGA Championship is the 24-year-old's first major victory. WWE Hall of Famer Ric Flair has been hospitalized and put in the ICU. Flair, who is 68, has been in the hospital since Saturday, where his reps have pleaded for support. Flair was reportedly put into a medically induced coma before surgery. The 2-time Hall of Famer is out of surgery, but there is no news on the nature of said surgery. Arkansas legend Frank Broyles has passed away from Alzheimer's at the age of 92. Broyles coached the Razorbacks from 58 to 76, leading them to a national championship in 64. His 144 wins in 19 seasons are the most wins and games of any Razorback coach in their history. The College Football Hall of Famer won 7 Southwest Conference titles. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
On Frank Broyles coming up at the top of the hour, David Basil will join us. He played for Frank Broyles. He is the founder of the Broyles Award and for the outstanding assistant coach in college football. And it's become one of the really nice awards, and that was because, as Basil will tell us, you know, Frank Broyles was very much about advancing assistance, which is very, very cool. All right, some top-of-the-hour texts as well from the 601. A healthy Watt and an emerging Deshaun Watson could be a thorn in the Titans' side. By the way, I agree. And that's no malarkey. Good thing they have one of the easy schedules in the league, Charles from Decatur. Now, Charles is also a Bills fan, and Madison Academy's Jordan Matthews. I don't know if you saw this or not. Did they make it into the update? I mean, he's one of our guys, a Huntsville guy, Jordan Matthews. Probably should be in the update. Anyway, Jordan Matthews, his first practice with the Buffalo Bills, he got a chipped sternum. I mean, there is nothing good about having a chipped sternum. That's a bad thing, man, a chipped sternum. You know what? I'm starting to I feel bad for Jordan Matthews, but I feel worse for Bills fans because I'm starting to think now that this is a Bills thing. I mean, you want to talk about Matthews got mushed. You want to talk about a mushed team? It's the Bills. It's not Sammy Watkins' fault. It's the Bills' fault. The Bills are mushes.
Hey, I don't want your money touching my money.
What's the matter?
I don't want your money in the same way.
My money's no good no more. Why?
Why? Because you're all jinx.
Yeah, they're jinx. Jordan Matthews goes to Buffalo, gets his first practice yesterday, and gets mushed. Now he's on the dreaded week-to-week list. Watch, now that Sammy Watkins is out of there, probably never miss another game. It's Buffalo, man. I guess Buffalo. I think Buffalo ought to be relocated into the CFL. It's damn near Canada anyway. Just run them right out of the deal and into the CFL. By the way, college football broadcasting note. I don't know if you saw this or not. Does ESPN only have one color analyst now? I mean, I know they got rid of a lot of guys. Kirk Herbstreit is going to work three games Labor Day weekend. He's got the Thursday night game between Ohio State and Indiana. On Friday night, he's going to go watch his boy play high school football in Nashville. On Saturday, he's doing the Tide game. And then on Monday, he's doing the Tennessee game. Herbie's doing three games in one weekend.
Gee.
I mean, you know, there is a lot of preparation that goes into those games. Just ask Cole. Apparently, Herbie's the only guy left at ESPN doing games. I'm not sure. I might have made that up, but I might be right on that, too. All right, David Basil is next. It's the Tom Abraham Show right here on 730-1039 ESPN.